This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and signature support comes from Jerry Lane Chevrolet and from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. In a few moments, we should have Jim Donnellan arriving in our studio. He's a man who commutes every day from Jefferson Parish to his office here in Baton Rouge, the longest-serving Louisiana insurance commissioner of all time. He took the helm on February 15th, 2006, succeeding Robert Woolley. So that's 16 years, 4 months, and 15 days. Long time for Jim Donnellan in charge, the man from Jesuit High School in New Orleans who has this long history in Louisiana politics. He was on the Jefferson Parish Council in the late 70s, 78 to 80. 82 to 2001, Louisiana House of Representatives. He ran for a few offices unsuccessfully, but he found his niche as the insurance commissioner, and he is now the longest serving person of all time in that position. He has surpassed Sherman Bernard, the house mover, and he has arrived. Jim Donnellan, appropriately attired in Dodger blue. He is a passionate Los Angeles Dodgers fan and LSU fan, and he is, of course, a proud alumnus of the University of New Orleans. I was reading and reciting some of your biographical nuggets as we were waiting for you. Weren't you student body president at UNO?
I was not. I was president of the Student Bar Association at Loyola Law School.
But at UNO, you're the guy who wanted it to be University of New Orleans.
I graduated, I became president of the Alumni Association.
There you go. I knew there was a connection there.
I heard at the Board of Supervisors meeting, she became President Clinton's science advisor, Mary Good, and her PhD in chemistry. Her husband was a PhD in physics, and they were two of the renowned professors on the campus at that time. And she was sitting behind me as I was testifying for the change, and I heard her sobbing because she said, with some validity, that losing the name LSU on her curriculum vitae would diminish her standing.
Well, she did rather well.
She did.
You know, years ago when Larry King had his mutual show at night, and it was amazing how many listeners he had 5 hours a night, but he had Mary Good on one.
Really?
Night. Yeah, as his leadoff guest, and this scientist from LSU, and I thought, I was in school at the time, and I was listening, and I thought, she's really something, and then within a few months, she was hired by the University of Arkansas, and off she went. But she did pretty well without having LSU on her vitae, as you say. And it's amazing, the old axiom that the passions in academia are so high because the stakes are so low.
Absolutely.
But David, Jim Donnellan.
David Vitter told me that from his brother, the chancellor at Ole Miss, once.
Yes. You and Vitter used to ride together.
We did.
For a while.
We did. I'd have been on time this morning if we were still riding.
And you were seatmates. And it's amazing how many political luminaries have come out of Jefferson Parish. It is amazing.
It is. It really is. It's got quite a history.
And as you know, when we were younger, New Orleans and Jefferson Parish were not the places to be a statewide office holder in Louisiana. Not at all.
Chet Morrison learned that bitterly 3 different times.
And already, an erudite listener has noted, Chet lost to John J. McKithen memorably in 1964. But think of the statewide office holders right now. You've got Strain and you, and there have been some in recent vintage. John Kennedy from Madisonville.
Right.
He moves around a little bit, though. He's not a native of that area. But, there have been a few in recent times that are prominent in Louisiana. Scalise, of course, is big guy in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Yeah.
But on the Jim Donnellan's here. It is almost a month late, but hurricane season has started. Usually June is a quiet month, but then, as we know, August and September, different stories. So within a couple of months, we could be facing another killer hurricane or two, unfortunately. That's the nature of the beast. And what can people do to be prepared right now?
Absolutely. And thank you for your indulgence of my annual visit on my storm tour to your audience and the opportunity to share these few tips that I bring to each metropolitan area, including our friends in North Louisiana who think they're not at risk, but indeed they are. Here in Baton Rouge, the worst event of my lifetime, of my career, I guess I should say, to include Andrew, was Gustav in 2008. And it made landfall in Houma, came through Baton Rouge, which had been avoided by hurricanes for the most part since Andrew back in 92. But it did a lot of damage here and then brought with it through Alexandria and Monroe 2 days of 12-inch rainfall each, flooding hundreds of homes. So my first message, and of course Baton Rouge got inundated and devastated by the 2016 floodwaters that again came from 2 days of 12-inch rainfall. So it doesn't take a hurricane with storm surge to flood Louisiana. My first message is access the still significantly subsidized National Flood Insurance Program, benefiting our state more than any other in the history of the program. Started actually as a result of Hurricane Betsy flooding St. Bernard Parish and Lower Ninth Ward in the late 60s, and companies saying, no more, we're not covering flood anywhere in the U.S. on our property policies. The federal government, as it did after the attacks of 9/11, when they created TRIA, the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act, created the National Flood Insurance Program. In its history, we've collected $19 billion for insured losses paid by the NFIP. That's out of a deficit of $30 billion that the program owes to the federal treasury. It's up for reauthorization, and there's a new factor involved called Risk Rating 2.0, which is the latest attempt to put the program on a self-sustaining actuarial basis. And that was tried back in Biggert Waters 7 years ago and rolled back shortly thereafter because of the draconian rate increases it brought to properties all over South Louisiana particularly. So still subsidized, most important, the best insurance buy any property owner anywhere in our state can make is the National Flood Insurance Program, in particular this time of year as we head into hurricane season. Number two, go over your coverage, know what you have covered and what you don't. And by that, I primarily am referring to what's called a hurricane or named storm deductible. A third of the policies in our state, the majority of State Farm and Allstate policies, for example, come with a 5% named storm or hurricane deductible. That's not 5% of your damage, it's 5% of your insured value. Typically, a home in Louisiana is insured for $200,000 in replacement costs. 5% of that means $10,000 hurricane or named storm deductible before your loss from the hurricane gets paid for by your insurer.
All right.
Lastly, quickly, walk through your home. Take out your cell phone. Take pictures of everything. Video if you want. Flat screen TV, furnishing, carpeting, etc. Such a huge help when you do have a loss, fire, flood, wind, roof coming off, whatever, to document your loss for your adjuster when the claims process starts.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Jim Donilon, insurance commissioner for more than 16 years now. Kimberly in Mid-City says, what if you're in a area designated as a low flood probability, and like I'm in the Garden District, that's a one out of 10. Should we still have flood insurance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyone can flood. You know, the best example, and I use it every year as I make this tour, the Grand Ole Opry in downtown Nashville got 6 feet of water in it. And the CBD in New Orleans, when the levees broke, got water downtown right out front of the Dome Stadium. Those are high properties and thought to be, in fact, the program will tell you 25% of what they pay out nationwide is paid on properties that are thought to be in low risk for flood areas.
Well, but a lot of people take their chances. And some in higher flood risk areas.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And the lady in the low risk area will get a very affordable premium because of that low risk. Now, risk rating 2.0 has changed the underwriting criteria, and it's kind of a black box that no one really knows what the criteria is now. It used to be elevation, certified levees, et cetera, et cetera. I got a big reduction in my home, my flood policy, when the $15 billion of improvements to the four parish metropolitan levee system was completed and certified.
877-217-5757, another segment with Jim Donilon, Insurance Commissioner. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing, and we'll get more on what's happening in hurricane season and also some companies having difficulties in these times, and some have actually shut their doors. We'll talk about that as well after this. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased you're with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757, and getting lots of emails for Jim Donilon, the insurance commissioner at talk@talklouisiana.org. And one of them is about inflation. Obviously, everything is affected, including insurance rates. How much?
Significantly. I have an annual insurance conference. This year, we held it at the World War II Museum Hotel, and I was walking down the corridor with panels going on in all of the meeting rooms, and I ducked into one on property and casualty, and a slide was up on the projector that said 64% of property in the U.S. at large is underinsured, and it's underinsured to the extent of 24%, 27% of its actual replacement cost value. So that means, on average, nationwide, 25% increase in cost to buy your policy, because you really are required by most companies to insure to the full value replacement cost of damage that might happen to you. So that starts, and it's all built up around inflation and the cost of supplies and labor, et cetera, et cetera. When I turned at Corsi, I saw a giant purple and gold billboard that said The Chimes, hiring all positions and whatever. Everyone is trying. I mean, that's an expensive way to hire help for an iconic place like the Chimes here in Baton Rouge. But it's a reflection of the increased cost of employment, supplies, et cetera, that are a major factor in increasing the cost of insurance. Absolutely.
And some companies recently have gone down for the count.
Absolutely. We've lost a half dozen, three of them domiciled here in Louisiana, and two in Florida, one in the District of Columbia, that were doing homeowners business in our state when actually it was Ida that brought them down. Laura, Delta, and Zeta, the year before, they managed and would have survived. But with Ida the year after, they went insolvent and will leave behind $600 million of unpaid bills that the Guarantee Association will pick up, has been picking up about $300 million to date in paid losses, and will make those policyholders hold, as the FDIC does under bank failures on a nationwide basis. Each state has a guarantee fund system like ours here in Louisiana to protect policyholders against such insolvencies.
Greg in Sherwood Forest writes, Michigan has a program paid by insurance companies to tell the state when insurance is dropped in the state of Michigan, then suspends the license plate of the cars. Now police can identify cars with expired insurance by the license plate reader. My son and I have been in four accidents, and three of those people didn't have insurance. Why doesn't Louisiana do this to cut the number of people driving with no insurance?
We actually do. It's the Office of Motor Vehicles, and they have real-time data on all drivers, whether or not they are in compliance with our mandatory insurance law. It's the only form of insurance. People think, because of that practice and that policy, 49 of the 50 states, I think it's Rhode Island New Hampshire, that does not require auto insurance for drivers. But 49 states, including us, do, and get reports from insurers on a real-time basis daily on who is insured and who has dropped insurance. And it doesn't fall under me. It falls under the Office of Motor Vehicles, But we absolutely do a similar to the Michigan program that the caller is referencing.
All right. Clara in Lafayette says she heard something on her radio regarding people having the opportunity to contact your office if there's a problem with their insurer. Is that correct?
Absolutely. 800-259-5300. We've fielded over 8,000 complaints since Laura hit Lake Charles a year and a half ago on out of 800,000 claims that have been filed for the four storms, Laura, Delta, Zeta, and Ida.
800,000 in a state with 4.8 million. That's one-sixth of the state.
No doubt. 150-mile-an-hour winds in downtown Lake Charles and 150-mile-an-hour winds in Port Fouchon. Katrina, for example, when it made landfall, had 115-mile-an-hour mm-hmm. winds.
Now, another listener notes that you and Joe Biden are approximately the same age. Actually, I think Commissioner Donilon is a couple of years younger, but it's fair to say, and this isn't a cheap shot.
No,
you're more energetic, more mobile guy. Does that mean you're running for re-election?
It does. I enjoy what I do. It gives me a great deal of satisfaction to be able to help folks, in particular, in crises times like we're experiencing in the insurance market in our state today.
What do you make of what's going on in our world? It's an amazing time, isn't it? You have a tough job as insurance commissioner, but my goodness.
Jim, I would never have dreamt that we would be where we are today. I saw a blurb on the internet yesterday that said that a poll shows that a majority of Americans are not proud of our country. And that's just unbelievable to me. We are absolutely, without any contradiction imaginable, the greatest system and country. Not perfect. I mean, lots of flaws, but we have done so much good for so many people for so many years and continue to be committed to doing so and embarrassed when we fall short, no question. So I thought of that on my way here this morning because tomorrow evening when I leave the office, I'll leave a 4th of July message for my workers by email mm-hmm. and was contemplating what I would say in it. But it would be something like I just said. I'm proud to be an American, and I can't imagine why the majority would not be proud.
All right. I've got an observation here that a law enforcement official wants me to pass along, and it dovetails with insurance, that this is one of the deadliest weekends every year, July 4th, and almost all fatalities, according to this person, on the road are related either to drunk driving or no seat belts or both.
Or distracted driving, which is comparable to drunk driving. Impaired driving.
Well, like falling asleep at the wheel, which I'm amazed you don't do.
It's not easy to stay awake in the morning. Sometimes on the way back, it's not as easy.
Well, it's important to drink the Red Bull or whatever you can do to keep going because you're right. Distracted driving is a factor too. But there is no need to be intoxicated and be behind the wheel. And now we have ways where you can get home pretty easily.
Uber, Lyft.
Yeah. And so, that's a relatively inexpensive way to do it. When you get a DWI, it costs people their jobs sometimes.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's a stigma, and it should be.
Absolutely.
All right. 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard is on deck. And as I stated, we got lots of emails today. And Robin says we're not going to take any calls, but people are passing along information to her, which she's conveying to me, which I'm conveying to Commissioner Donilon. Now, what about the prospect that this forecast is wrong, that we're going to have an active hurricane season? Sometimes they don't get it right.
No doubt. And hopefully they will be wrong again. The big cost driver in premium rates these days for South Louisiana in particular is the cost of reinsurance because our market is dominated by small regional companies. Post-Katrina, the major national carriers, including the one I was with, either left the state or stopped writing in the state. Not only in our coastal state, but all coastal states from Maine to Miami and around the Gulf to Mexico. And we have better than any other state replaced those large companies with small regional carriers, 30 of them, six of which have failed in the aftermath of the last two hurricane seasons. But the way they can operate and profitably do business that the big companies have left behind is by reinsuring their risk up to their chins. They are small companies, two dozen employees. They contract with independent adjusters to have them on staff and ready for catastrophes like we've had the last 2 years, and they buy reinsurance in a market that is two-thirds located offshore, places like Bermuda, London, Toronto. And that's how we spread our significant coastal exposure.
Well, Commissioner Donilon, let's bring you back around Labor Day when things usually pick up, unfortunately. Thank you.
I'll be happy to.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Mark Ballard, with his Thursday visit, is at the ready. The man at the Capitol for the Advocate and Picayune, your number, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Now, when I was doing the preview, I mentioned that we would talk about congressional redistricting and abortion and guns with Mark Ballard, and a listener correctly noted, we'll talk about the 1-6 Commission, and the star witness was a young woman, 25 years young, and really an impressive person, and really, whether you like what she said or not, I would encourage all people of every age to be as poised and as graceful under pressure as Cassidy Hutchinson was this week. And she is a great American. And the New York Times today in its op-ed piece talks about perhaps the biggest surprise of the hearing seems to be that people are actually paying attention. 3/4 of voters have heard or read about the investigation. 60% support it, including 1/3 of Republicans. 58% of Americans now believe that former President Trump should be charged with a crime. That's up 6 percentage points before the hearings began. And Ms. Hutchinson has given plaudits for her testimony and her composure during a difficult time. Now, some have questioned what she said, but her lawyer reminds us that she was under oath. 877-217-5757. This young person worked for Steve Scalise, and a listener notes, Mark, that our congressional delegation has been largely silent about the 1-6 Commission hearings. What do you think?
No, well, it is true. They have not said much about it, and trying, I think, to see how it all plays out before they make any decisions on where they're going to stand on it. So I didn't know that she had worked for Steve Scalise.
Yes, she did. Yeah, she did. Yeah. And Scalise, of course, is backing President Trump and denouncing the commission, and Kevin McCarthy tried to put Jim Jordan on the panel. And Garrett Graves said that their request should have been adhered to by the Democrats. But Jordan's a subject of the investigation, which would seem to be a problem. But anyway, this is a big story that's going to continue. And I have a feeling that President Trump may have difficulty even now getting the Republican nomination, despite the fact that Republicans, in our delegation anyway, are almost mute when it comes to anything regarding any bad news about the former president, who they salute to almost hourly, if not minute by minute. Chris in New Roads. Chris, good morning. Chris, you're on with Mark.
Good morning. Mark, good morning. I was calling on Monday, Mark. You had a front page piece in The Advocate about Judge Shelley Dick. It was titled about seeking information on her background, and I was just wondering what was underneath that, why? And the second thing that I would like to make a comment about is, would it not help the dialogue to rise to a new level of civility if we stopped saying about judges, this is a Democrat or this is a Republican? Because when people put on that robe, they're supposed to just put away their party and uphold the law. I know it doesn't always work that way, but it seems to me that perhaps we could help that to So that's my thought.
Okay, well, although, as we know, just look at the Supreme Court. And Reverend Andrews, I love you, but look at the Supreme Court. The ones appointed by Democratic presidents or nominated by them generally vote one way, and those by Republican presidents vote another way. Politics is hard to remove. And Shelley Dick, who I don't think she's a flaming liberal. She worked for corporate entities when she was in private practice, but she was nominated by President Obama and I think is a very good judge. And if you read her decision, it's hard to argue with it, but yet, Mark, the U.S. Supreme Court shot it down.
Well, they didn't actually shoot it down, and it was more of that they put a stay on it, meaning that there's not going to be any more action on it. Remember that on Wednesday she was supposed to kind of draw up her own maps because the legislature did not. And so that's what it said. They're saying, let us decide the Alabama case before you all deal with the Louisiana case. So it wasn't shooting down her opinion, which was basically, you know, this is what the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act says, and this is what they did, and I find that they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And that decision will be coming, you know, this fall after we've elected those folks to the Congress.
We'll keep the districts so, as they are.
And to answer the questions, one is that why, and it's because, well, I mean, and you saw it in the article, is that a lot of people didn't know who she was, and she was making this major decision. And so we thought it was, you know, good to kind of introduce her to the world because she lives in that kind of a legal bubble. And why, yes, they are supposed to follow the law, but their interpretations of the law are basically differ based on political philosophy, as we've seen with the Supreme Court, as we've seen with the Fifth Circuit, and as we see in the district trial courts. And that's one reason why you kind of identify who did their nominations. And certainly as the House Minority Leader Blake Niggas said, is that was all he needed to know, was that she had been nominated by a Democratic President Barack Obama.
Well, sometimes judges go against type, and John Kennedy saw that with Wizard White, who was a conservative, and Kennedy, I think, thought he was more liberal when he nominated him to the Supreme Court. Wizard White was one of two justices to vote against Roe v. Wade in 1973, and he was a Democratic appointee. Almost all those justices who voted for it were Republicans, by the way. So things have changed. David Souter and John Paul Stevens, both Republican-appointed Supreme Court justices, voted for the recount to continue in Florida, which would have given Al Gore the presidency. And at that time, the Republicans, based on appointees to the high court, had a 7-2 advantage. And now they have a 6-3 advantage, with Ketanji Brown Jackson taking the oath today. But it's 6-3, and the six are hardcore, with an occasional exception by Justice Roberts. Patrick in Innisfail State. Patrick, you're on with Mark.
Hey, I guess my problem with the Casey Hutchinson is there's no cross-examination. And what she gave about the limo driver, that's a secondhand account. She wasn't actually there. That's hearsay. This is a show trial. This is a typical what you read about in social studies class with Nazi Germany, Roland Fleischer.
All right. I don't think that's analogous, but it is hearsay. There is no doubt about that. But it was stated as such. It was not stated as though she was the witness. And by the way, Donald Trump has every opportunity to come before that commission himself. And he has not done so. And as we know, the president, former president, he's a guy who said he was going to walk to the Capitol. Why didn't he walk to the Capitol? Could he have made the five blocks or so? I'm not sure. Instead, he got in his car, and the Secret Service driver thought it was too dangerous. And
that is the one thing that that we know for sure, or at least that there is corroborating evidence in her testimony, and that was from the Secret Service saying, you know, that he did want to move, to drive to the Capitol. And now, whether he grabbed for the steering wheel, that seems to be, he she got that secondhand too, but there hasn't been any corroborating evidence about that.
And she is under oath, so if she lied, she could be prosecuted. And Donald Trump, when's the last time he was under oath? Now, President Clinton always accepted invitations. He talked for hours about Monica Lewinsky, but President Trump never wants to appear under oath. I wonder why.
Actually, it probably wouldn't help him in such a way to do that.
Well, he might fall into a perjury situation like the former president did. But Donald Trump evades and obfuscates. And based on the composure, I would say at 25, Cassidy Hutchinson has more of it than Donald Trump does at 76. Carol in Jefferson Parish. Carol, good morning.
Yes. With regard to the redistricting, the way I see it is Alito changed his vote according to who's making the complaint and who's being complained against. Am I correct there?
I don't know. Mark, your thoughts about that?
I don't know either, but he's certainly entitled to his interpretation of what happened.
And the New York judge who got a case like Shelley Dick did, those lines have stood up, and those lines were drawn more favorably to Republicans. So as Reverend Andrews lamented, we shouldn't have politics in the judiciary, but we do. David in Atlanta. David, good morning.
You know, Mark Scheel said George Washington was the only president who never told a lie. Richard Nixon was the only president who never told the truth. Donald Trump was the only president who didn't know the difference.
Well, I don't think Nixon was a liar all the time, but President Trump, he, for example, when he said he was the best baseball player in New York City in 1962, now it turned out he hit 130 at New York Military Academy. There was a guy named Mickey Mantle who was best player in baseball at that time playing for the Yankees, but that's the kind of thing. He lies about everything. He lies when there's no point in lying. So when it comes to the big stuff, you got to question whether he's on the level. And he has a record of not being truthful. And the most prominent example of that is that he lost an election by a landslide. And I think, Mark, we're about to go to a break, but I think he's the only president in U.S. history to lose the overall vote twice. And both elections on that count were not close. 3 million the first time, a loss to Hillary in the overall vote, and 7 million to Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., the duly elected 46th president of the U.S. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Downs producing, and a bit more time with Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief, 877-217-5757. Bill Bryan writes, Representative Kyle Green had a bill to remove party labels from judicial candidates. House Governmental and Affairs Chair Stefanski said judges told him they would like that. The bill passed out of committee with three Republican women opposing it. The Republicans lobbied hard against the bill. Green did not bring the bill to the floor for a vote. Mark, obviously the discussion that Chris Andrews brought up is one that got off to a start but was quickly squelched at the Capitol.
Well, we elect our judges in Louisiana. Not every state does so, but we elect our judges. And I think that having that Republican sticker on the back of their name, it makes it easier to be elected in Louisiana. And that was one reason why they are against the idea of removing the political parties. And I think that was what was underlying that. And to be fair, I mean, in cities, in the urban areas, having a D behind your name is important if you want to be elected to the bench.
877-217-5757 is your number. And Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on with Mark.
Yeah, good morning, sir. I believe that they deposed President Trump like for the first impeachment trial, and he had a really fake memory. He couldn't remember or couldn't recall.
Well, that's not unique to President Trump. And look at the Supreme Court justices who, in their confirmation hearings, they certainly misled the American people on whether they would overturn Roe v. Wade. But, Mark, it seems when somebody's in one of these testimony situations, they often try to shade the truth, and there is that fine line between shading the truth and just outright lying.
Well, I always kind of balk a little bit about calling them liars because basically, if you look at what they say, it's kind of as you say, shading the truth. Is you know, they could go either way, and I don't think that the Justice Kavanaugh is the one that they mostly are aiming that argument at. And I don't think he actually ever said, "I'm totally against it," you know, or "I'm totally for getting rid of the abortion thing." He was always, mm-hmm. he talked about precedent. He talked about, you know, that sort of thing, you know, but he also was saying that it was, you know, important to look at all of the factors. So,
yeah, we're going to take two more calls for Mark, and please be brief. Frank on Lee Drive. Frank, you're on with Mark. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Mark, I just wanted to call. I just read your article in today's paper in regards to the voting systems commission. I thought it was very thorough. I did happen to be at that commission meeting. One comment you made was that this all kind of started because there was a bunch of questions that came up after the 2020 election. I just wanted to point out to you, I tracked this thing, and according to I was looking at the Act 227, and it was actually two things that drove this. One, of course, is to delete the responsibilities of the Secretary of State in regards to selection of voting equipment. And, of course, the other one was to attack Dominion voting equipment.
He makes some good points, Mark.
Well, this is true, but, I mean, it all kind of came about with pressure from people or citizens who came to the state capitol to basically complain that the election had been stolen. Mm-hmm. Remember that Dominion played a vital role in that narrative. And
okay, final call.
Certainly. Go ahead.
Well, last caller for Mark today, and he'll be back next Thursday. Henry at the Country Club. Henry, you're on. Please be brief.
Hey, Mr. Mark. Okay, yesterday for that hearing on the voting machines, I don't know how we're supposed to take it serious because the MyPillow guy flew in, made his speech wanting us to get paper ballots and count them one at a time, and then he flew out of Baton Rouge, left at 8:31 last night, went to Fort Lauderdale International Airport, I guess, to file his report. Ain't that something?
Mark, your response.
I don't know how to respond to that. I know that there is a good many people, and a lot mm-hmm. of them have emailed me this morning in the most unflattering terms, who believe that Joseph Biden is not the legitimate president and that the election was rigged and stolen from Donald Trump. And there's a lot of them, including Mr. Litton.
All right. Well, quickly on the gun front, watered-down measure passed both houses, signed into law by President Biden. But in Louisiana, only Cassidy and Carter voted for it. Kennedy voted against it. Graves voted against it, as did Scalise, Higgins, Ledlow, Johnson. The beat goes on.
It does indeed. It does indeed. Most of our delegation is following the Republican playbook.
Mark Ballard, let's talk again. It's a busy world, and glad you're in it and covering it. We'll be counting on your insights next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a nice week.
You too. Happy 4th. And we're joined in our remaining time by Lisa Lewis, who has a best-selling book that is called The Sleep-Deprived Teen. Arianna Huffington says it's a call to action for parents everywhere, why our teenagers are so tired and how parents and schools can help them thrive. And good morning to you, Lisa Lewis.
Good morning.
Lisa, by the way, is a journalist. She covers parenting, public health, and education. She's written for the New York Times, Washington Post, and many other highbrow publications of note. And as we get older, supposedly we don't require as much sleep, but you say teenagers are exhausted, strapped for time, and it is a problem. How so? How much of a problem?
Yeah, it really is a problem. And I should also note that many adults are sleep deprived too. The National Sleep Foundation in 2020 did a poll, and about half of the adult respondents said that they felt sleepy at least 3 days a week. And about one-fourth said that it sometimes or often interferes with their daily activities. So just to put it in perspective, adults too often could use more sleep. But for teens in particular, we know that up until age 18, the official recommendation is that they should be getting 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night. And the issue is that far too many of them are not getting anywhere near that amount. In fact, mm-hmm. 2019, the CDC did a survey. They found that only about 1 in 5 high schoolers were even hitting that minimum of 8 hours a night. And the issue is, when teens are sleep deprived, across the board, it has some pretty significant ramifications. We could talk about it, any of them that you want to, in terms of athletic performance, in terms of drowsy driving crashes, in terms of their ability to learn in the classroom, and oftentimes literally to stay awake for early morning classes. And then mental health is a huge one that really is exacerbated when teens are sleep deprived.
You note that sleep boosts athletic performance, which in our world is important, and it's also important to be active, but even small improvements in sleep can make a difference.
Oh, yeah. What they have found is, what I should mention is one of the key ways to help our teens is to set healthy start times for what time schools start in the morning. And the official recommendations are 8:30 or later for middle or high schools. And that is official medical advice from the American Academy of Pediatrics, because when schools start too early, it cuts into our teen sleep time. And that in turn does have all these mm-hmm. other effects. But what they've found is when they move school start times later, in general, the greater the change, moving it closer to that ideal of 8:30, the greater the improvements.
All right. Now, not only do I think people of all ages, but in particular teens, that's the focus of this book, they don't sleep enough, but the quality of sleep is also important. And sometimes people are in bed, but they're not sleeping, or if they are, they're not getting good sleep. Why?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because there's sleep quantity, and then there is also sleep quality. So there's so many things that can impact that. Let me just touch on a couple of them real quick. The first is having to do with sleep disparities. And I actually have a whole chapter on this, the fact that not all teens sleep the same. And so just to touch on a couple of things quickly, in terms of race and ethnicity, and also in terms of socioeconomics, if you are a teen of color, in general, you tend to sleep worse than your peers. And in large part, a lot of that is driven by discrimination, everything from microaggressions on up. And the reality is, yeah, that does impact your sleep. And then mm-hmm. when you haven't slept well, it impacts your emotional resiliency. And that's true for all of us. So just being able to deal with the daily stressors. But the other piece, looking at neighborhoods in terms of sleep quality, if you live somewhere where it's noisy, either outside the house or inside the house, let's say it's crowded living conditions, that absolutely impacts your ability to get a good night's sleep. Same thing if you don't feel safe where you live. Same thing if you're going to bed hungry. So all of those can mm-hmm. impact sleep. And then there's another aspect, and if you'd like, I'd be happy to talk about it, and that is technology.
Well, we are short on time, but I'd love to have you back. It is an important book, and sleep is important for people of all ages. Daniel Pink, who's been with us on this program, says Lisa deftly reviews the science and provides practical advice for putting scientific insights into action for parents and educators. This is an urgent and timely read. The book is The Sleep Deprived Teen. Thank you, Lisa Lewis. Thank you.
Thank you.
And First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet provide signature support.